Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Let Me Interrupt, A Woman's Perspective in Today's Workplace. We're coming to you this morning on Saturday. I'm so happy to be spending our morning with our next guest. This is going to be a great podcast. We would like to welcome Vida Jennings as our guest today's podcast to talk about all things HR. Vida joins us from South Carolina. She's a native of Orangeburg, South Carolina, holds a Master's of Arts in HR Development from Webster University, Fort Jackson, and a Bachelor's of Science in Business Administration from Callaway School of Business and Accountancy, Wake Forest. Vida is a recognized human resources leader within her industry of insurance, and we're delighted to have Vida. Vida, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Melissa and Cindy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course. Welcome. I just want to say that I'm so excited to have our first HR pro on the show, and I know you're going to give us so much valuable information. But what I wanted to start off with was, where did you get your start? What motivated you to go into the human resources world?
You know, it's very interesting. As a student at Wake Forest University undergrad, I took a class with Professor Klein Harrison, and it was like an introduction to human resources. And I actually waited because every time I wanted to take the class, it was full. I finally got in and I was so excited about taking that class that I wanted to take a second human resources class and ended up doing an independent study in HR with him before I graduated. Fast forward, I took a temp job at RJR Reynolds, just in the HR department, and knew I was in love with them and the field itself of really connecting employees in the workforce and helping organizations achieve their goals by leveraging their greatest strength, their human capital. And so then I said, well, how can I get into this career? And the one great thing about the industry and the field is it's forever changing. I approached some senior leaders and did some informational interviews and asked them how they got their start. Some people encouraged me to go back to school, which is why I ended up getting a master's in human resources development. And after I completed my master's, I did additional informational interviews and then found that the trends in the industry were around certification. But to get a professional certification, you have to have related work experience. So then it becomes the chicken versus the egg kind of theory. And what do you do next? Well, I found my way into nonprofit management and did 2.5 years in membership and recruiting, and then had a conversation with our director of human resources. And she said, you know, what you're doing is human resources work. You're just doing it from a volunteer perspective. So I leveraged my nonprofit management experience to qualify for my first HR certification and then begin for applying for sole HR roles. And the rest is kind of history.
Wow, that's really impressive, Vida. That's actually really interesting. I noticed that a lot of HR professionals have these acronyms behind their names, SHRM, or can you maybe kind of give us like a high level overview of, you know, the basic ones and what those mean?
So one of the oldest human resources credentialing organizations is the Human Resources Certification Institute. For more than 40 years, they have been producing certifications like the PHR, the Professional of Human Resources, or the SPHR, which is a Senior Professional of Human Resources. Over time, they've done specializations by state like California or entry-level certifications. A couple of years ago, the Society for Human Resources Management, also known as SHRM, branched out on their own and created their own series of certifications. So that's where you start to see the SHRM Certified Professional or the CERM SCP, Senior Certified Professional. I have actually had the privilege of serving as certification chair for our local professional association in the past and have been a qualified instructor to teach for the SHRM prep course. And I have been a volunteer in the past with the HRCI and actually served to rework the body of knowledge for the professional exams on a committee about 5 years ago. So certification in our industry is something I'm very passionate about.
Wow, you worked on the body of knowledge? That's really impressive. Now, can you tell us a little bit about and expand upon how volunteering for those positions can really take you to the next level and what spoke to you internally to go ahead and start putting yourself out there like that.
You know, my parents have always had the ability to invest in their community. And it was a life lesson that they passed on to me. And one of the great things about volunteering is the different people that you come into contact with and you expand your personal network. Now, I've been on both sides of the volunteer component. I have served in volunteer roles, but I also have been in a capacity where I recruited and managed volunteers for a nonprofit organization. I always encourage people to find something that you're passionate about, that you value, and then find that as a way that you can give back. Because when you are giving back, you have a sense of pride, but you also feel better about your community. Your community is where you live, work, and play. So how can you make that difference? Now, over time, I've given my time and talents to organizations like ATD, where I've served as president of my local chapter, SHRM, where I was on the board of directors, because moving professional associations forward and helping to bring those that come behind me, it is very important. I believe in developing people because I have a philosophy of lifelong learning. But I also have picked causes that are important to me because of my community. Hunger is very important to me. I believe everyone should have the opportunity to have good nutrition and good meals. And so whether that's me packing boxes at my local food bank or starting a dinner club where we go out to eat every other month, we pick a nice restaurant, have good fellowship. But before we leave, we all make a financial contribution to our local food pantry so that they can keep food on their shelves. The other thing that I'm passionate about is healthcare. While I work in a healthcare organization, other people don't always have the ability and the rights to have affordable insurance. So when I was in Leadership Columbia, a local program sponsored by our Chamber of Commerce, again, a commitment to lifelong learning, I graduated in the class of 2012. We chose as our class project the free medical clinic and did some refurbishment and some fundraising development from them. Well, finding out about the clinic was a fantastic opportunity for me. And ever since we graduated 12 years ago, I've supported the clinic in some way, shape, or form, financially or by time. And about 4 years ago, I was honored that they asked me to join their board of directors. And I continue to advocate for the underinsured and those that need medical assistance on a regular basis.
No, I think listeners, like you're hearing it here from you know, I so eloquently stated that follow your passion. And if there's something that you're passionate about, you know, Vida, it sounds like you're really involved in a lot of great work.
Melissa, when it comes down to it, it's all about people. Whether it's the people that I help and serve in the workplace or the people that I help and serve in the community, it's passion for people. I always say that I'm a people connector and a solution seeker. And because that's how I brand myself personally, those are the things that I'm passionate about, and those are the activities that I engage in. You have to live your brand.
Wow, you have to live your brand. What an important message. And I see that not only are you giving us this amazing knowledge, but you live it. I mean, hearing the volunteer work that you're doing, hearing how engaged you are in your career, how you take and leverage those opportunities for growth, it's truly an example of being able to take advantage and give yourself in order to receive from your passions. That is amazing to share with our listeners.
I would say that's a fair assessment, Cindy. I never would have put it like that, but thank you for pouring into me.
No, absolutely. And, you know, just kind of shifting over to where we are in the world right now. I know that in the past 2 years, everything has changed and trends especially probably shifted. And so I wanted to get an idea from you, from your perspective in the field of HR, what changed? What, like, whereas going through COVID truly the game changer that they say it was, and how is that being seen on your end?
Oh, absolutely. Individuals are reevaluating their priorities, and many people have chosen to remove themselves from the workplace altogether, whether it's to be a stay-at-home mom or to be a retiree. Some folks have decided to go into entrepreneurship and start out for themselves, launching consulting businesses or things that they've been passionate about on their own. Others have decided that they want more flexible work arrangements, whether that's a hybrid environment or a remote work environment, or just simply part-time work. So lots of people are experiencing career shifts at this point in time and are looking for new opportunities. And so because of this, people are having to dust off their skills and learn how to either brand themselves or polish up how they would sell themselves as they explore these new opportunities.
Savetta, I really like what you had to share about selling yourself and making sure you put your best foot forward. Can we move into discussing what resume or interview advice you would have for our listeners?
Sure, Melissa. Here's some things that I always tell people when it comes to interviewing. You need to practice, practice, practice. There's so many resources available out there about common interview questions or industry specific interview questions. Go out there, pull some thoughts together, jot down a couple key bullet points, include your practical career examples that can help you recall stories that you can tell. Because really, interviewing is the opportunity for you to storytell, for you to share your success stories. Some people should take advantage of the STAR technique. I'll tell you a little bit about more about that. When you're responding to a behavioral interview question, give the situation, the task, your action, and the result. That formula will make sure that you cover all components and give an accurate and complete interview response. Now, sometimes interviewers will give you the opportunity to say, well, what would you do differently? You can still use the baseline of the STAR technique with that, but then in the end, you would end with an AR. So STAR AR, situation, task, action, result, alternative action, result. So there you're giving a different perspective. And remember, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. Your interview starts, if it's an in-person interview, as soon as you get within 5 miles of the organization, that's when your interview starts. And I say that because if you stop at the store or you run in someplace before, you don't know who you're going to run in that may be going to the same place that you're going to. When you get to a facility, if there's security or reception, make the most of each of those interactions and make sure they're a pleasant experience as well.
Oh, Vida, I love, Melissa. No, I love this. I love this so much because, you know, and honestly, Cindy, don't edit that because I just love this. This is really speaking to me in the sense that I had an interview in the past that the interview panel, one of the hard questions towards the end was, tell me a time where you failed. And how did you handle it? And it was almost like a deer in headlights, like, oh my gosh, well, we've all failed, right? We've all failed. Mm-hmm. But do I share, you know, my biggest failure and it scares them away? And I ended up feeling overwhelmed and, you know, in my mind quickly trying, you know, but here I am sitting on a panel interview with people, you know, staring at me, and I'm trying to think of my biggest failure. And I was able to pull something together, but I felt really unprepared for that question. And I think I felt unprepared for that question because it's just something that, you know, maybe as we go through life and we're evaluating our failures, we don't think of like a mitigation, like how, so we failed. What did we do about that failure? And how did we turn that failure into maybe overall a success?
Exactly. So one way to address that question is what happened? And if you had to do it over again, what would you do differently? Or if you can't think of what you would do differently, share what you learned from that experience.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, for me being in healthcare, so for anyone that hasn't like listened to our prior podcast, so for me in healthcare, I'm by background, you know, I've spent my whole entire professional career in healthcare. And many of the interviews, I would say 99% of the interviews that I've had to take place or be a part of were very behavioral structured. Tell us a time when, you know, where you found yourself in a difficult situation with a coworker or a patient. How did you handle that? So very behavioral driven. Cindy, I'd be curious, with your background, what kind of interview styles have you participated in?
I'm starting to think back, and the interviews that I've done typically are more technical. You know, they want to know that I can do what I say I can do. And it's followed by more of a personal, what am I about? And maybe that the technical questions are also behavioral.
I might just not know what behavior.
But Cindy, actually what you're saying is instead of saying, tell me about a time, they giving you a specific scenario. And so you just have to pick up at the task, the action, and the result. It all kind of falls into the same flow. It's just they're setting the stage for you.
So I actually also took part in an interview where I was part of the panel, and we were interviewing a candidate who was studying for a particular certification. And one of the panelists elected to ask a very technically focused certification question. And it definitely caught the interview, I guess the interviewee, off guard. And I don't know how well prepared they were to answer the question, but I think it brought like an overall, I don't know what it brought, Vida.
Well, but Melissa, you know, it's interesting that you should bring that up, because sometimes people ask very technical questions in an interview. And depending on the type of industry, I can remember being in an interview for an HR supervisor position years ago. And the person asked me a technical question of how to do something in Excel. You're not sitting in front of a computer. You're sitting across a desk. And it's not like I had the band of the header of Excel memorized. And I froze. And I'm a very accomplished speaker, did more than 10 years in Toastmasters, distinguished Toastmaster, you know, can go out and speak in front of thousands of people. And I literally froze. Sometimes in-depth technical questions can throw you for a loop. If you can recover, pause, because you don't have to jump right into responding to any questions. If you can pause, you can also ask the interviewer to repeat the question. You can ask them to clarify the question. You can shift or redirect. Well, I don't want to bore you with all of the details of the steps because we're all consummate professionals. But if you can describe the overall concept and the process, then you still could come out with somewhat of a win-win situation, enough to let them know that you have knowledge around the topic, but maybe not enough to dig yourself in a hole where you completely blow the question.
I like that. I like that. Cindy, I don't know about you, but I feel like my confidence meter is going boop, boop, boop to the right. Yeah, this is really all really great. Great information, Vida. I do have a question. So I think we all can probably agree on this call that if we go out to anywhere, really, a public restaurant, anywhere, even driving down the road, you look over and people are constantly on their phones. So I recognize that individuals are probably definitely looking for their next future career opportunity via all kinds of social media channels. You know, you got LinkedIn, you got Indeed, you've got, you know, Monster, you've got all these different job boards. So question for you is, so job boards, are they lame or are they game?
They're game. And here's why they're game. The war for talent right now is very competitive. And so sometimes the people that you need with the skill sets that you desire aren't necessarily looking. So social media opportunities like LinkedIn, where you can search for keywords, view people's profiles and make connections and reach outs to people, are actually a lot of how we recruit for the specialized talent. I had a vacancy last year around the end of the year, December, and I was looking for a specialized skill. And it had been posted for a while and I was struggling. I reached out to a couple of my contacts, told them what position I had open, and asked them to share the job postings with individuals in their network in case there was someone that was looking. One of my contacts applied for the job. I didn't even think they were thinking about making a change because they always thought that working with me would be a cool opportunity. And it sounded like something that would work for them. And eventually, as we went through the process, we were able to meet them where they needed to be financially. So you never know what those kinds of connections can yield you. I recently hired a different position. Again, I said, hey, network, share if you know anyone. And someone that I worked with 10 years ago shared their post with their connections, and they shared that post with someone else. And that's exactly how the person that I hired found out about the job. I didn't know her, but it came through my network. So when you're looking for specialty skills, and in that particular case, the second one I was looking for, a diversity and inclusion person, which is a niche kind of field. A lot of people don't do that. And the first position I was looking for, a higher level talent development partner, which again, maybe a higher skill set. People who are more settled in their careers aren't necessarily looking because they may be happy where they are. Those social media kind of interactions and connections often help you get that top talent. Job boards, I find them, and this is just my experience from my employer, are great when we are looking to hire lots of positions at one time. We do a lot of contract work, so we have to ramp up contracts very quickly. And there are times when we might need 25 of this position or 50 of this position, or there have been times where we've needed 300 of a position. And job boards are a place where lots of people go. You get high visibility and you get a lot of traffic, and that generates a lot of interest, which gives our recruiters lots of qualified people to look at. So neither of them are lame, depending on what you're sourcing for and what kind of talent you need to fill your openings.
I like that, Vida. I appreciate that. So I want to talk about, real quickly, if you don't mind, something else that is of interest to me. And that is, what if you don't check off all the check boxes on a particular job description? So you're surfing through, you're looking, you want to continue to grow professionally, you want to step into that next level, but you may not check off all the check boxes, but you can speak to the abilities and the experience that you do have. Do you think that should, you know, prevent someone from going for that job? That, now, don't get me wrong. Now, if I scroll across and I see NASA astronaut, I might like outer space, but I know I'm not qualified to become a NASA astronaut. But even if there's a concern that you're not qualified, should you go for it?
Here's where doing your research about the organization is key. And I say that first, Melissa, because those organizations that are federal contractors or do business with the federal government are subject to audit by agencies like the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs. And so if you're working on a government contract and you have posted minimums or posted preferreds, you have to keep to those things because you have to ensure that those people make those qualifications. So knowing what kind of business the organization is performing is key. In that case, probably wouldn't apply. If you don't meet the mens, if you don't meet the preferreds, there's still a chance. In the regular commercial environment that doesn't necessarily have those restrictions, go for it. Because a lot of times, people will hire for potential when they're not bound by contractual obligations. Other times, people will hire for fit when they're not bound by contractual obligations. So that's why knowing the organization that you're expressing an interest in is helpful in evaluating whether this is the right opportunity for you or not.
That's truly encouraging because there have been many times where I find a company and I love the work that they do. Their mission statement speaks to me. It really feels like there's a connection. And then I look at the job postings and I just don't hit any of the requirements. And I think just for our listeners, you know, one of those, the biggest barrier for me thus far has been that I don't have a master's degree. And it's been such a barrier that I've started the process and I'm working on my master's degree. But that has always been the thing, that I look at these job postings and I see master's degree and I just don't even apply. I just don't even apply because I feel so intimidated. And I can imagine, you know, even looking at a list of you must use this software and that software and you must be able to have X and Y years of experience doing this very specific task, it can truly be daunting.
If you never ask, the answer is always no. I want you to think about that, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you never ask, the answer is always no. So maybe this is where an opportunity where informational interviews with that person or a person hiring in that field can help you see how they evaluate experience. Sometimes when people look at years of experience, you think you have to have it all consecutively, but maybe you have a job where you did something similar to that. So it's related experience. So maybe you didn't do it full time, but you did it maybe 30 or 40% of your time. So maybe 2 years of your time in that role equates to 1 year full time experience. Experience can be calculated so many different ways. Trust them to rule you out. Don't you rule yourself out.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. That's really good. Exactly. I like that. I like that. I think by then, Cindy, in my current role where I'm at presently, I think that while I was not able to effectively communicate the experience within my skill set for my role, I do have that relatable experience on the receiving end. So like, for instance, if my job involves overall education, deployment, and how we deliver that deployment to the folks who consume that, my relatable experience is being on the receiving end, being a lifelong learner, being a student, being a teacher, you know, all of these things. And so I felt like I brought a different spin onto my role and within my interview for where I'm at presently. So that's really good. Let them rule you out. I like that. All right, Vida. So I have one more question for you and then a fun wrap up question. So you found your dream job. You found something that you really want to chase. You're continuing to rise that next echelon in your professional development. You see a job, you apply for it, you interview for it. And then you sit there and you're waiting. Do you recommend that folks continue to follow up until they're told we filled it with another candidate? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I absolutely believe in following up. And actually, I want to go back to even before you leave the interview. just closing out any interview. Because we didn't talk about this, and I want to make sure I get this in. The purpose of the interview is not just for them to screen you, but for you to screen them and to evaluate if this is a place that you want to be and you want to bring your talent. I always try to make sure I have 2 to 3 questions prepared for them, not about HR-related terms, salary, hours, benefits, or any of those things, but ones that position you in that role. So they're thinking of you in that position before you even leave. For example, how will I be evaluated within the first 30 days of this position? You know, what will success look like for me in this role? Who would I work with closely when I assume this new position? If it's in person, would you mind showing me the space that I would be working in when I accept this job? Speaking things into existence and closing out the interview so that they start to visualize you in that setting. Following up with a thank you note by email right away. If it's virtual, doesn't hurt to take advantage of that. And then follow up with another way to sell yourself within your thank you note. If they've given you a longer span of time, because a lot of times they'll say, oh, I have continuing interviews going into next week or 2 weeks out. If they give you a longer span frame, do a handwritten note. If you have personalized stationery or thank you cards with your initials or monogram or whatever, take it up a notch and do that, because people don't get a lot of snail mail, nice print, nice cardstock these days that sets you out against the crowd. If it's coming up to that timeline and they haven't responded, do follow up. But when you follow up, don't just make it about the interview. With the recruiter, you certainly can. But with the hiring manager, follow up, one, like I said, with more information about yourself, again, reinforcing that brand. Or two, if it's been some while, follow up with some resource or information that made you think of them, an article or something that you guys discussed, so that they'll know that that conversation stood out to you. So that always make it a dual purpose follow up. That's my tip.
All right, Vida. So something we've incorporated in our podcast since we've kicked off is kind of just a fun way to end things. If Vida had the opportunity to kind of go back and look over her last two decades of where you are now within the HR sector, what would you tell the young Vida about taking risks, going for that next job?
I would tell the young Vida the same thing that I told Cindy. If you never ask, the answer is always no. So take the risk, apply for the job, put yourself out there, network, speak it into existence. If you don't believe in yourself and you can't tell about your transferable skills, and if you're not able to take that victory lap for yourself, who else is going to promote you? Just ask the question. And when or if you're not successful, what can I learn from this and what can I do differently?
Absolutely. I agree. Every interview that I've ever sat within, if I was being the one interviewed or if I was on the interview panel, there's always takeaways to make the next experience better, to refine your answers, to look within, look over your experience. And even the questions that we ask those who are within the interviewee seat. So super powerful. Thanks, Vida, for that information.
The job that I have today, when I wanted to apply for the job, my organization had hiring restrictions in place. And I was in an area that if you had not been in your position for 1 year, you could not apply out at the time. And I saw the job. I reached out to the hiring manager and I said, I'm really interested in your job, but I'm not able to move at this time. If something else in your area comes up in the future, please let me know. They went through the hiring process, made an offer. That person decided they didn't want to relocate from Utah for the position. And it ended up that they ended up reposting the job all over again. And the manager reached out to me and said, hey, just a heads up, this job's going to post again. And by the time that entire process happened, I was approaching my 1 year mark and I was eligible to apply. And I ended up getting selected. So sometimes it's about just making the relationship connections to also keep your name out there, even when it's not your time.
That's such an important thing to think about, the timing of it all. I mean, that's amazing how that worked out for you. And I'm sure there have been many situations where it's just the timing. The timing is just wrong. But you have to keep pushing and putting yourself out there. Now, that was such a good gem. And, you know, I just want to give you the floor. Is there any other great advice, great gems that you want to give our listeners?
So two things. In the age of technology, a lot of people are not comfortable with virtual interviewing. And understanding the importance of having a good environment for a virtual interview, being aware what's visible, and if your platform allows, selecting a neutral background, good sound quality. I'm starting to see more people take interviews from their cars, which, okay, if you're currently working, that's understandable, but make the most of where you're parked. Be aware of ambient noises. Use your headphones and blur out. And definitely don't take an interview in a moving car. even if you're
I love that. Okay. I'm sure you've seen it all, Vida. I am sure you've seen and heard it all. I love
yes.
that.
Yes. So that's one thing. And the other thing is most people don't think about their local libraries. And libraries have evolved over time. And many of the top-notch libraries now have career centers in it where they have career coaches and they will do complimentary resume reviews. They will do mock interviews with you, or they have software that will allow you to practice video interviews. Because some organizations even do one-way video interviews where you record your answers and submit. And that can be daunting for some people as well. And as far as upskilling, occasionally you can take free classes through like LinkedIn Learning or Lynda, what used to be lynda.com, through your local library membership. So don't sleep on the connections to your community library.
I love that too, Vida. I have to laugh when you said organizations have taken advantage of having these pre-recorded interviews. I took part in one a long while ago, and they gave you three opportunities to record a question. And I remember I couldn't get it out correctly, and I boofed through all three rounds. And I'm like, well, there it goes. I have to send it out that way. So I think going in prepared is key.
Well, and see, Melissa, that's where those tips of thinking about your success stories. You've got an extensive career, and on the fly, it's kind of difficult to recall different situations. But if you go through and you start documenting things that you could use when you're talking to individuals, even if it's just a quick bullet point, that'll bring to your remembrance and help you in those situations like that.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, Vida Jennings, I know we've taken so much of your valuable time, and we could not thank you enough for spending your Saturday morning here with us on the podcast this morning, giving all of our listeners some great takeaways. And I feel better prepared for my next interview. Cindy, what about you?
Well, I mean, please no one tell my boss, but yeah, I do too. And I think I just need to start shooting my shot. I'll put it that way, and applying for jobs, even if I'm happy where I'm at. At any point in my life, I know that I just need to keep making myself marketable and keep practicing. So it was lots of good knowledge.
Well, Vida, we thank you so much for your valuable time spending your Saturday morning with us here on the podcast. For those listeners who want to connect with Vida Jennings, she can be found on LinkedIn, Vida Jennings, or if you want to connect with her on Twitter, her Twitter handle is DeaconSPHR. Again, DeaconSPHR at Twitter. And Vida, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear the finished product.
Super, super. Thank you so much again. And for our listeners, I just want to remind you that you can give us a review on Apple Podcasts. We've had our first couple reviews come in, and yes, we are a 5-star rated show so far, but we want to keep that going. So we really appreciate your feedback. And if you have any constructive criticism, shoot us an email. Any ideas, go ahead. We're really open to it, and we want to make content that is applicable and resourceful for you. So as always, keep interrupting, and just remember that your voice and your opinions matter just as much.